Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Today we're fortunate to be joined by Dr. Peter Westerby, who spoke at our Community Centres SA annual conference this November. He is a Senior Social Practitioner Director at Community Practice Co-op, Associate Professor of Community Development at Murdoch University, Visiting Professor of the University of the Free State, South Africa, and has been involved in community development for over 20 years. He spoke about a spirited and soulful approach to adaptive and anticipatory community development. He's inspiring, he warms your heart, and I know, like myself and the people who attended the conference, after listening to the podcast, you are going to definitely have a different approach about the future of community development. Welcome to the podcast, Peter. I was delighted to have you on today because at our annual conference, honestly, your presentation, people are still talking about it. That spirited and soulful approach to adaptive and anticipatory community development was the title. But you took us to a place where it just filled our hearts. So I'd love you to share with the listeners, what is a spiritual and soulful approach for those who weren't able to be at that presentation as I and the other attendees were?
All right. Well, yeah, it's great to be here. Look, it's a topic, theme that I've been exploring for 30 years, yeah? And I have to acknowledge the roots of depth psychology, which comes out of Carl Jung Institute and James Hillman, who really did a lot of work thinking around a soulful approach to living a life and contrasted that with a spirited. So I've then done a lot of thinking about, well, what does that mean in the community development context? And basically, in a nutshell, I would say that a spirited understanding of community development is all that kind of energy that a lot of us are used to. We want people to have a vision. We want people to think about their effectiveness. We want to see success. We want to see people filled with the energy of activity and agency, because that's what makes community development work. People coming together around their common concerns, their dreams, their desires, and taking action together. And we want to see effectiveness. So that's what in depth psychology we call spirited. It's being up on the hill. Does that make sense?
Definitely does.
Yeah, you get when you get up on the hill, you have a top view of what's going on. You have a big picture view, and you can develop a vision. But what I'm trying to say is we also need what depth psychology calls the soulful element. And in life, that's the part of life where, in balance, we go up hills, but then we go down into valleys. It's the part in community development, when I've tried to reflect and write about this, where we go into failure, where things don't work and they end or they come apart or there's grief. Because relationships fall apart, hey? Because we all know community development ultimately is about relationships and cooperation. And the human condition is we also fail on that in many ways. So rather than ignore it or pretend it doesn't happen, it's like, how do we have a framework that acknowledges this as well? In fact, in acknowledging it, we can be more honest, take a deep breath, and be less attached to just the success, less attached to just the effectiveness, but also cognizant of the human element. Does that make sense?
It certainly does, Peter. And as you're speaking, that all sounds wonderful, and I was so inspired, as were our audience at our conference. The concern I have is around the funding restrictions and requirements that make it prescriptive rather than adaptive. So what do you think is the future of community development if those funding attitudes and approach doesn't change?
Well, okay, so let's frame this in the context of reality, yeah? Community development is a social process, okay? People working in social relationships. In that sense, it's a living process. And what I mean by that is, living processes are always adapting to what's happening. You just have to observe nature. It adapts or it dies. Now, you cannot control people. This is the fundamental premise that I want to keep reminding people. So you come up with ideas, you come up with projects, but you cannot control what people do. So the fact that people participate in a project and make it happen, from my perspective, is a gift. It's the gift of change. you can't make it happen. You can't manipulate it. So if funders don't understand that these are all investments in experimental processes based on evidence and our good intentions and our best practices, but despite that, you cannot ensure things are going to work. You just can't because, you know, I mean, I've worked with many groups and it's going wonderfully and then two people get sick and someone loses a partner and they can't attend anymore and things are fundamentally fragile. So if funders don't understand that, we'll either start just pretending that everything's hunky-dory when it's not, or start trying to control people and manipulate people. Yeah, so I probably can't articulate a bit better, but that's my first shot.
No, I love that, Peter. And it leads me to the comments you made around how we're becoming very systems-driven and bureaucratic and how that's impacting on community development.
Yeah, well, you know, we are living in a world where systems are now encroaching everywhere, and often that's linked to technologies, yeah? Because a lot of things now happen technology rather than human intervention. So on one hand, humans are losing control of what's happening in their lives because we're handing it over to technology. I mean, I work one day a week in a university. So many things now happen through online portals. You can't even find people to talk to. So if the technologies are not working on that day, you can't do anything. So on one hand, that's happening. Yeah, and on the other hand, we're living in a world of compliance and audit culture and risk management, which I kind of understand. But then what that starts to do is transform community spaces into bureaucratic spaces. And what we need is both. We clearly need bureaucratic spaces. You know, we need to be able to go into a housing system and apply for a housing apartment or something and know that there's a bureaucracy that's working in a fair and systematic way. And that's important so that people who are waiting longer move further towards the queue. But in a community space is different. You know, this is a place people should be able to walk into, feel at home, get a cup of tea. I told the story of going to the community centre recently where you couldn't even go to the toilets without security cards and you weren't allowed to just go and make a cup of tea. And I think this is a travesty for community centres because they are so important to hold this culture of inclusion, welcome, hospitality, relationship. So that's really what I'm pushing.
Peter, we're really talking about people-centred practice. So what does it mean to have a practice in community development terms?
Well, that's a great question, Kerry. So to have a practice, on one hand, it's simply to have an idea, clear idea and intention behind what you're doing. You know, so for example, if you're going to run an event, you know what the intention is of the event. You know, is it to build connections, trust between people? Are we trying to bring people together to hear their stories? Like, there's an intention and an idea. It's not just an event. That is to have a practice. Now, in a community development sense, we have a body of knowledge that practitioners need to draw on. You can't call yourself a medical practitioner if you're not drawing on the opus of knowledge, workshops, journals, upskilling with professional development. You can't call yourself a practitioner if you're not doing that. It's exactly the same in community development. You can't just say, oh, I'm a community development worker because I'm good with people. No, you're a community development worker because you have a practice, and that means you're investing in learning, going to conferences like the one you held, going to workshops, being with colleagues, learning together. So that's the answer.
I'm talking to Dr. Peter Westerby, the Associate Professor of Community Development at Murdoch University and Senior Social Practitioner, Director of Community Practice Co-op, and many other things. Now, Peter, you've had a long involvement in the community sector. What is missing in the field? What do you think needs to happen to ensure that it's vibrant and alive and very much on people's radar? Because often I say to people, oh, I'm CEO of Community Centres, they say, oh, what's a community centre?
Yes. Good question. I wouldn't mind just having a dialogue with you and asking what you think's missing. You know, I mean, I was at the Tasmanian Neighbourhood House Conference in September. We have our biannual Queensland Community Development Conference next year and at your conference just recently. I think we need spaces like this. But then what we need beyond that I think the missing ingredient at the moment is strong supervision practice to help young practitioners be mentored and supervised by older ones. And we need managers of neighbourhood centres, community centres, to invest in that, ensure their workers have time for mentoring and being supervised or providing supervision, because that's how people's practice evolves. And then at a macro level, we need to be telling the story, as you are, of the cost-benefit of investing in place-based community centres that not just focus on a population of people with disadvantage and don't just provide services, but are there for anyone in that neighbourhood to walk into, yeah?
Yes, and inclusivity, of course, is very much the hallmark of community centres, Peter, but not always easy to achieve because the volunteers are getting harder to find, it's becoming more compliance-driven.
Yep.
What are you seeing as how community centres are addressing that, or how can they address that when they've got all of this compliance and regulation before they even actually start delivering impactful work in the community?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, I'm having a lot of conversations lately around the idea of volunteers. The idea of volunteers, you know, and therefore they become a part of the program and they have to be compliant. We've been involved, for example, in running a big project across the Sunshine Coast with neighbourhood centres around disaster recovery. A lot of people that we've been sitting in circles with are saying, we don't want to become volunteers, we don't have time to be volunteers, but what we can be is an active citizen. We can, with the support of neighbourhood centres, understand how to reach out to neighbours in our street, to be better neighbours, to look out for vulnerable people in our neighbourhoods. We can do that as an active citizen. So what I think is we actually need to reframe our programs to not just have volunteers in the centres, but programs that support active citizens out in the neighbourhoods, supported by our community development workers. Those active citizens don't need to be compliant. They don't need to be registered. They're not even coming into the centre, but they're supported to be active. Does that make sense?
It certainly does, and it reminds me now of the movie that Whoopi Goldberg starred in, Sister Act, when she opened the doors of the convent and said, we've got to get out in the street. It's not all about being here. Even though community centres are place-based, it doesn't mean to say that that work only happened within that place.
No, absolutely. Like, we've been partnering neighbourhood centres across southeast Queensland, running a course called Building Better Communities. It's about 15 citizens, people from the neighbourhood come, they sit in circle. We teach them how to do community work in their street, their neighbourhoods, their workplaces. We're not recruiting them to become a volunteer. We're supporting them to be active in their streets and neighbourhoods. And it's highly effective work. They get groups going, they get projects going, they're partners with the neighbourhood centres, but we're not trying to pull them into the centre. That makes sense.
That is excellent and such great news to hear, because the big concern that we have, particularly in Australia, and you've got it in Queensland, Peter, is the vast distances. How do we physically get people to the centre, to the places? If you can make things happen where people are actually in their place, then you're going to have much greater reach.
Yes, that's right. And this is all about then how do you support the professional community development worker in the centre, not to just be spending all their time in the community centre, but supporting groups in their places. So, you know, we also need to think about, well, how do we manage community development workers in ways that enable that? So in saying all that, I'm not suggesting all the groups that are happening in community centres are not super important and valuable. I was only at a meeting last night and hearing a wonderful story of a new neighbourhood centre up here in Queensland where, you know, a group of carers in the neighbourhood are now coming and meeting in the centre. They're all in caring roles and they've found one another and they're meeting at the neighbourhood centre. It's a great little group. The neighbourhood centre provides that space. It's great.
And Peter, it was interesting. I was often talking about volunteers and there's this whole comment about we've reduced since COVID, hard to find them, hard to keep them. But what you're saying is you're going out to meet the volunteer, albeit they're not a formal volunteer, you're going out to fit within how it works with someone's life in the community, rather than saying this is our box that you have to fit into.
And this is adaptive practice, Kerry. It's like, well, let's observe the field. The field has changed since COVID. And it was changing anyway because we have the pressure, one, of an ageing population, and two, more and more families where everyone's working, cost of living means people with double income, you know, both partners are working hard. There's less energy for volunteering. So either we, yeah, make the mistake of saying we've got to recruit volunteers even though it's getting harder, or we go, the field has changed, so let's adapt. And what does that mean? You know, this is adaptive practice, Kerry. Reading the field, sensing into it. It's what I, at the end of that keynote, I brought in Osho Sharma's theory U. And the top of the U, and it's the only part I'll mention, he says the mistake is we do what he calls downloading. We just download everything we've been doing the same way, the assumptions. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, well, that's all very well, but if the field has changed, then you're not going to be very effective. So definitely the field of volunteering has changed since COVID, but it was changing. COVID amplified what was already happening. Mm. So, yeah, we need to, I think, reflect a lot on that and adapt what we're doing in terms of language, frameworks, approaches, practices, yeah.
And, of course, Peter, change is the most helpful of life. And by resisting against that and doing what we know, which is what humans love to do, means that we're not being adaptive. So what you're talking about also raises to the fore that co-design can really work well, because you don't know what you don't know until you ask people and see what they want.
Exactly. I didn't pluck this out of the air. We've learnt this year as we've sat with these groups across the Sunshine Coast, and people are saying, we don't want to be recruited to volunteers. We haven't got the time or the energy. And we're like, okay, we hear you. So what is it you could do? And what language could we give that? And people really love the idea of active citizenship again, you know. So we develop programs to support active citizenship rather than volunteering.
That's fabulous. Can you talk us through an example that you know of what some of these active citizens have done in your area?
Well, this was particularly a disaster recovery initiative. So we were gathering people that had that concern of how do we recover after disasters. And again, they're like, we don't want to be put on an emergency response committee or brought in to be volunteers in your neighbourhood centres. One group in a little community, Utilo, has monthly dinners now on a Sunday. People come, they connect with one another, they make sure they have a tree of phone numbers so that if there's disasters, people at least know two or three people they can call and look out for, you know. So they're creating the network, and their mechanism is a meal once a month, yeah? So that would be one example. Another group have created little postcards that they put in every letterbox that gives people access to information and QR codes around disaster preparedness and that kind of thing. So these are active citizens.
And Peter, how much intervention was required or assistance and support from the community development worker, and how much red tape didn't get in there? So I'm just thinking postcards. If you were to develop a postcard in a community centre, it would have to still go through managers, it would have to be approved, the board might need to look at it, the risk. Where does that sit now? Are you able to be more flexible and dynamic because these are active citizens and not formally engaged?
Yeah, well, so the community development worker has supported a group in that place. They call themselves Udlo Connecting. They're not a formal registered legal group. They're just a group, but they've, you know, they can do what they want. they're their own group. Yeah. That's the beauty. And the community, so it's not a project of the neighbourhood centre. It's a group supported by the community development worker, yeah? And they have their own autonomy, their partners, their active citizens. It's what we call the power of meso groups in our method framework of community development. They have that autonomy. You know, we support them financially, like in that project, some money has been supported to them.
That was going to be my question. So you do provide a level of support, both financial as well as how they run, and just there to give them, yeah, that support, someone to go to.
So there were a few investments. One, community development worker building relationships, yeah, in that neighbourhood. And then we put a call publicly to who would like to join this course called Building Better Communities, yeah? Mm-hmm. So we then ran 6 3-hour sessions on a Thursday morning, and about 12 to 15 people came, and we discussed many issues around disaster and community building. So that was a skill building, relationship building investment. And then that group formed and they meet themselves, and we had some money from the Sunshine Coast Council that we could support them with around some of their initiatives. But they're running on their own now, 12 months later. They're an effective group.
That's absolutely brilliant. And as you've been speaking, Peter, makes me think, if you take anything like the disaster relief, you could translate that to any need that a group feels they see in their community. The principles and processes are exactly the same.
Absolutely. Yeah, if people have got a shared concern or a shared dream, our job is to facilitate them coming together and helping support them in process to do analysis and action building. And I think the biggest support we can provide people is around, how do you cooperate as human beings? That's the hardest thing, as you and I know. It's in our culture, we call it the heroic model of social change. The one person with a really great idea and they want to do it in the community. That's sometimes effective, but it's also very fragile and, you know, reliant on one person. What we're promoting is a community approach. So a group of people that have come together, built cooperative capabilities. It's a shared idea. It's much more sustainable and it's much more owned by the community. Yeah,
absolutely. And the words that you're using around that, adaptive, and it is what they're looking at, they need, how they can run it. It's addressing that big connection issue, because people want to be involved how they want to be involved. And as soon as you try and put them into this is the strict requirement, they'll rebel against that.
Absolutely spot on. I agree. And our job isn't to get people to participate in our projects. Our job is to support people to create what they want, they desire.
And Peter, this is very much about facilitation, isn't it? Rather than sometimes the community development is, well, you tell me what the needs are, we'll take that, we'll put that into a program, and then that gets delivered back to you. This is not what this is about. This is moving towards facilitation role rather than having that real act of having to drive it, because it won't sustain, and sustainability is important.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the opening framework we use in any of our training of workers is the contribution first of service delivery and then of facilitated development work. And they're both important, but you have to realize service delivery work is what you just said on the first hand, you know, what are your needs? We'll go away and design something, we'll deliver it to you or for you. That's a service approach to problem solving, yeah?
Yes.
And the development model is a facilitated model, exactly what you said, you know? We'll walk with you, we'll accompany you, we'll facilitate skill building, network building, we'll link you to other resources, and we will work with you. We will go on the journey. Like, you can trust that we'll be by your side, but it's a facilitated process.
Well, once again, Peter, you filled my heart with warmth, and I know that our community sector audience are going to just love this. I know you need to head off. You've got an event today. But thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And we love the value that you gave us coming to present at our conference. I think you really will change how people feel and work with community development moving forward. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you so much, Kerry. And it was a pleasure being there. And thanks for this invitation as well. Take care. Have a great day.
Next week, we'll be back to our usual format. I'll be back in the studio as we continue telling stories from far and wide in our next Community Conversations.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.